Ninja in the name. So I chose this one. I did Tech Mentor conference last time, and I had a 7 ways of cracking Windows 7. I'm going to have it this year by the name of 8 ways to crack Windows 8. I'm really aiming for Server 2012. It'll just be a little bit more of a job for me. So, as you can perhaps guess, English is not my native language. So just so that you bear with me when I'm trying to make my jokes and translate them from Finnish to English, you have to have some kind of an idea where I'm coming from. So when you get the word administrator and you start doing troubleshooting on your computer and you need the local administrator, you get administrator and we get this one. I'd be willing to bet that not many of you are able even to spell it out. I can spell it for you. It's järjestelmävalvoja. It's easy. Just that it doesn't stay as a word game, but to prove it to you, when I do debugging, you get a tool called gpedit.msc, which is the local group policy object editor, and in Finnish, and in the Finnish UI, it's this. And that's not even a long word in Finnish. So a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to get a Surface, I got a hat here, cool EMC hat. After the session, please walk by and drop your business card here. I am willing to give out one Surface, although you won't get it instantly, because I have to go to the queue. No. No, actually, I didn't know it beforehand, so I have one. And also, I have these cool t-shirts. If you got questions after the session, they have järjestelmävalvoja on them, so you absolutely need this. I got a picture of Stephen Rose wearing these in springboard parties, so it's really cool. Our agenda, I teach troubleshooting. If you want to have a list of what's broken in Windows 8, that's a totally different session, especially when Microsoft usually tends to get some kind of an information on something that is broken and they try to fix it. So this is about troubleshooting. There's no lists of what's broken, but I'm trying to... What makes it black belt, if you ask me, is the difference between people usually doing troubleshooting for an operating system in a bit of a wrong way. So we're trying to get you up a level just so you can do troubleshooting easier. Although it's a Windows 8 session, I'd say about 98% of the stuff goes very well with Windows 7. Just to establish a few baselines. As long as I've been teaching troubleshooting, I've always told my students that the only logic in Windows is that there's no logic. And now that this is getting recorded, I'm not sure if I should have said that. Well, many of you know of these few examples that I have here. You know that all your boot files are on the system partition, and all your system files are on the boot partition. That's just always been so. They can't change it. All 64-bit code is in the system 32, and all the 32-bit code is in the SysBob 64. As logical it is. If you're trying to debug SMB protocol, the file transfer protocol, if you try to debug it, you have to go and tweak your parameters in the registry. You're not going to tweak the browser service, but you have to debug the Bowser service just because they spelled it incorrectly. I thought Bowser was the guy who's against Mario and Luigi in the game, but I was actually doing this only about a couple of weeks ago, trying to find the parameters in the registry and just trying to make it work, and then suddenly realizing that, no, actually, they just misspelled it. It's Bowser. One of the core networking drivers in the Windows OS is called AFD. Why? It has a really cool name to it now, like some function, additional functional driver or something like that. It's AFD because of the guy who's responsible for the kernel was trying to get a device driver done, and the team who was doing it didn't get it done, and he asked and yelled at them, like, why can't you make it work? They said, it's already built, but we just don't have a name for it. So that's when he named it just another freaking driver. Actually, it's not freaking, you can probably guess what it is, but your registry is filled with hives. Why are they called hives? They're called hives because the guy who was responsible for the technology was scared of bees. So the same developer told him that, I'm sure that you are trying to avoid this project as much as beehives. So he called them hives. So like what we're dealing here with is something that has no logic into it. We have to do all troubleshooting not so much like obeying any rules. Just have to go for it. I'm going to use a few sets of tools, which I always need. I need them for troubleshooting every single time. They're sysinternals tools. Sysinternals tools come in a suite that you can download as a zip file. Or if you haven't seen the coolest user interface in Microsoft.com, that's nowadays the live.sysinternals.com. It's a really simple one. I like it. You can get the extracted exe files. Then you need debugging tools, not so much for debugging. I'm not going to do that much with stuff with WinDBG, but we need the debugging tools just to support the sysinternals tools like Process Explorer. And of course, we need network monitor. When we have trouble with the network, we just have to see it somehow. Luckily, Windows 7 and Windows 8 have a built-in tracing, so you can trace beforehand without the monitor and then look at it afterwards. You guys have seen your error descriptions and heard your clients tell you what kind of errors they have, so I know you know most of this stuff. I always start when I have an end user who is trying to tell me what's the error that I'm trying to troubleshoot, I'm trying to teach them a bit, so we would get a little bit better error descriptions. I have a few examples from my own life. This is probably from your life also. So you have the other side is that you have people telling you that my computer is broken. That's all that they can come up with. It's broken. They have nothing for you. And then there's the other side, the worst or best example that I've ever had. This is an actual screenshot from a paper that a client of mine brought to my table during the NT4 time frame. I didn't know what to do. Like, come on, you gotta thank him. He's like done exactly what you told them to do. And at the same time, you're just almost breaking to laugh. Like, come on, guys. So let's take a few of these. First of all, the students, I'm talking about students as I'm teaching so much, but when talking about clients, they think that we know every single one of the error codes that we have. So we'll try a few of these with a demo. CMD. Okay, that's small. Let's change it a little bit. It's a big screen, I know, but I still tend to do this every single time. As this is the black belt session, we are going to use something called the ninja mode. You don't really need to see anything if you know your stuff. No, we're not. Let's go here. Net help MSG is an old one from NT, not hell MSG, which will just translate your error descriptions to text format. It's really good. You don't have to remember everything. You do have to remember a few ones, though. Who's going to the party tonight? Almost all. Good. The only one you have to remember when you go to the party is NetHelp MSG 4006. You're not allowed to replicate with non-configured partners. Anyway, if that's not enough for you, one thing I tend to do is if there's a error dialog of some kind, let's take one. System will, no. System. I'm trying to type it. It'll give you a dialog. Just remember that whenever you have a dialog, you can control C, open up your email, control V. I don't know why Microsoft hasn't made a button next to it saying like copy error, which would make it a lot easier for the end users, because it's not that easy to tell them you just press control C, control V. I actually had a friend of mine who was doing troubleshooting with me many times, and first time I heard him answer a phone call was, the phone call was like this, Jukka, okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, you just press control A, control C, control V, control N, control V. Thanks. I was like, what did you just do? Well, the guy was having difficulties with his Word document, and it was spelled all with a different color, so I just told him to choose everything, copy everything, open up a new document, and paste it. I was like, are you sure that's the way you should be, like, trying to tell it to your end user? But that's the guy who told me the ninja mode also. So. Oh, sorry, that's not all. If that's not enough, in Windows 8 and Windows 7, you get the snipping tool. I love it when I'm having courses and teaching people, and then my students teach me. Happens every single time. And only a couple of months ago, I was telling someone that I love snipping tool, but as I do a lot of blog posts, the only bad thing is that I can do a snip something. But what I cannot snip are the menus. I'd like this one snipped. And a student of mine just told me, have you read the help? So, no. Yeah, it actually tells you exactly what to do. Now that you are snipping, you just press escape. Then you open up what you're doing. Then you press control print screen, as the help says, so you can get it. If that's not enough, then you go for PSR. Problem Steps Recorder, which was introduced in Windows 7. So you can do step-by-step error descriptions. If the dude is trying to open up Notepad and then he's trying to format, he knows his italic fonts, but he doesn't know how to resize it, he can just highlight an area and just say, I don't know how to resize. And when he's done, he just presses stop record, and then he can send it via email. As it's only screenshots, he or she can just sit there for an hour and think of what he was doing. Doesn't get any bigger than that. If you want to enjoy your recordings, you can just have it run as a slideshow and see whatever they were doing. So, I'm going to try and build this up from something that's happening before logon. So you have an operating system, but trouble might start when the user logs on, but it might start even before. So if we're really talking about the black belt stuff that I'm talking about, what I think it means is that you have to know how to get more information than normal troubleshooting can. And first step is that you have to have some kind of a way of working on the computer when no one's logged on. There's many ways of doing it. I love the way Mark Krusinovich shows the session zero one. He uses the hidden session zero to hide like a process monitor. That's one way of doing it. or you can just use the system account. There are three accounts in Windows that are always logged on. They're logged on before anyone else logs on, so you can use them as well. Event logs are a good start, of course, but this is probably the coolest thing. If you've ever used Process Explorer and chosen the option of replacing Task Manager, then this is exactly what you've done. Microsoft has a built-in feature called Image File Execution Options, which is meant for debuggers, so that they could have a customer open up some software and think it opens up straightforward, but actually they first open a debugger and then open the software. How this works is that this bypasses every single path value, etc. So you can really play with your friends if you wish. Let's see. Let's close Notepad and a few of these windows here. Now that you usually open up Notepad, you know what happens. Although you open it here, it'll open, although you are not in the System32 folder, because it's in the path variable. So let's go here. Let's go to the Beehive. Software, Microsoft. I use this for cracking all the time. So I don't know if you've used it before, but you can easily do password cracking with this one also. Image file execution options. Then we'll just insert a key. And let's say we want to replace Notepad. We'll do a debugger string value. And use calculator. So now, however you do it, even if the user tries what I think he might think works, going to Windows, System32, Notepad, right-click this Notepad here, and I open this Notepad here, and I open the calculator. You can guess I've done this the other way, but just as this is a Microsoft conference, you could, for example, try something like this. Chrome.exe. Let's steal IE from here. Is Google here? Yeah. I'd always get it, IE. You can guess I've done it the opposite way sometimes also. Let's not get into that one. What I honestly use this for is not to bug my friends, but what I'll do is replace some executable that is already running in the pre-logon context. So I'll use sethg, which is the coolest. You've probably seen it used for cracking. And I'll just insert CMD, which means that now, whenever I need my CMD, I can just bang on my shift key. And luckily, this one is something that also works before anyone has logged on. So when I can't get in, I can just bang my shift key and brute force in. And the coolest part is I'm running a system. So I have total control of the operating system. So what do? Basically, we checked out the users and then just net user hacker password add net local group administrators. In Finnish, that would be järjestelmänvalvojat. That's it. Then you can just You have to log on, shut it down once to get it visible here, as this is a workgroup computer. And a domain, it would just work instantly. Let's go for the demo. And leave that there. Why would I do that? Honestly, why would I do it? I would do it because now that I actually sign out, you can see the hacker here also. Now I can do whatever. Whatever you need. Usually what I need is basically sysinternals process explorer. Okay, that's in probably in here. So you can use all your tools before you log on. I would recommend you do not start up Explorer and you do not start up IE because you're running a system. That would be the worst thing that you could do for your computer, basically. Malware would like it a lot. Okay, that was the demo already. More info on logon. Autoruns from sysinternals. One cool trick. I honestly learned this only a few years ago, but I was debugging a company laptop. Someone called me and said that I think I have a malware infection or some kind of thing on my computer because it tells me all the time that there's Internet Security 2011 that is willing to install and protect my computer for every bad thing. It's like, okay, probably yes, you do. Luckily, my users never have admin rights, so I wasn't that worried. What I did was I told her to log off the computer. I logged on the computer with my own ID remotely, and as I don't know her password, at least I'm not supposed to know her password, what I did was let's see. I'm going to show it to you from here. We have autoruns here. Let's actually go here. You take autoruns, you don't right-click it, but you shift-right-click it, as you know, probably, and choose run as different user, and then just ask the user to type in her own user ID and password. So what you get is you haven't logged on with the infected user, but you do get the list what the user would start when she would log on. So you can clean it before the logon happens. Makes it a lot easier. We can check this from my... actually, let's do hack... No, we've done hacker already. Who do we have here? Let's actually take a more interesting demo. Now that I have a few friends sitting here, they know that this is the part that I promised I would never do, which is do a demo that I didn't plan to do. I always do this. But let's see. Let's do it on this computer, rather. So take autoruns, shift, right click, run as different user, use my own. Because this one should have stuff auto running on it. Here we go. So now you have the list of this user of what is going to happen when he logs on. Just clean it. And you're done. Well, okay. You know what to do with malware. The bad thing is that she was on the network. If she would have been in the internal network, I would have never done that remotely because I want her to disconnect the computer instantly. And of course, there was a session just before this about performance toolkit. That's what I use when I have slow logons. But that's not the subject at hand here. Background services. About 50% of hard troubleshooting scenarios that I run into have something to do with background services. So what do we do with background services, and what are background services, and how they work, and what can they do, and what can't they do? Basically, it's 50% it's a security issue, 50% it's something else. We have tools for both of these scenarios. For security, you need security logs, you need the local security settings, process explorer, process monitor, stuff like that. If it's something else, it's basically process monitor. If you know David Solomon, he always says that when something is broken in Windows, run process monitor. It's as easy as that. Everything is fixed by process monitor. If you use process monitor, usually what I do for the first step I do is just run sc command. You could do this in PowerShell. It would be a lot cooler, but I don't know PowerShell that well. I promise to learn soon. But I use sc.exe just to get the process ID. And when you get the process ID, inject it straight into a filter. So you can use process monitor to filter everything that's happening with this single process. I always love it when I get my students to a point when they start talking about services referring to them as he or she. That's like when someone says, like, I think he cannot do it. So you actually can become the service, meaning that you can use the service accounts. The service accounts have user profiles. They are normal users. They have their desktop. They have their My Pictures. So you should just try to think of them as normal users. Users have different kinds of permissions. If you think about the service accounts, there are three. Local service, network service, they both belong to the local users group. So they have low, limited user rights on the local computer. Local service, when connecting network shares or network whatever, uses a null session, doesn't have any kind of authentication to it. If you change to a network service account, then the network service account is a limited user locally, but uses the computer account when connecting outside. And then there's the ultimate one, system, which is equal to Unix's root, basically. Can do whatever, and is part of the local administrators group, and if connecting to the network works like network service. We refer to local service and network service as he and system as she, at least in my family. They also have SIDs, security identifiers. In the current operating systems, services, on top of having a user ID behind them, they also have a security identifier. So they can have, as they have SIDs, they become security principals, and they can also then get permissions. You have probably seen this one, Trusted Installer, on the left-hand side, on Windows 7 and Windows 8. She's a service. You can also just use the service accounts like when you are giving access rights. But you have to just type in NT service / and the service name. If you're trying to do this from the command prompt, then you have to be a bit careful. SC show SID spooler. There you have the SID. You might have to type it in to some kind of code or script. But if you do this, be careful, because Spooler has one too. Spooler has one too. Even the most common and most popular one in Windows 8 is, when do we have a break, has a SID. So it basically just uses the string of letters that it finds, and it's always the same on every single computer if the name is the same. Just be careful with that. Using the system account, that's the most important thing. Okay, actually I'm lying, that's the second most important thing when doing black belt troubleshooting. You do have to have the correct rights to do it. You cannot play around with an administrator account or järjestelmävalvoja, for that matter, whatever your administrator is called. He doesn't have the rights that you need. That's like a, that's an old... Usually home users think that administrator is the guy who can do everything, but that's many of you know that's not the deal at all. So first of all, system has more user rights than an administrator will ever have, even the built-in one. He doesn't have to worry about any group policies. So if someone is trying to prevent you from running your Chrome, system can run it. There's no way of preventing it from doing it. I won't show that here. Can see stuff that admins can't. Can stop processes that admins can't. So if you're fighting malware, if you want to stop a process, will say access denied, even for an administrator. So you will have to change the system account to do proper malware killing. And it has a higher integrity level than an administrator. How many of you knows what an integrity level is in Windows? Good job. You can definitely get a t-shirt for that. It's been there since Vista, and I usually never meet any students or clients who would even know what it is. Although it's one of the biggest security barriers that was introduced in Vista, and it's something that makes your life a lot harder on Windows 8. This is a very, very basic way of presenting this. I could easily use the whole 75 minutes just talking about this one, because it's stronger than share permissions, it's stronger than NTFS permissions. Basically, every single process that has when a user starts up a process, the user has an access token, right? You can see it with the command whoami/all. That's my access token. I have privileges. A lot of them. It tells you your SID, it tells you the groups you belong to, and then it tells you your privileges. And it also has something that says mandatory label, high mandatory level. This is an admin using UAC, meaning that I have already asked for higher permissions, but still I'm at the high level. You can't get higher than that with an admin. When a user starts up a process, the process inherits the access token from the user. So if a normal user shoots up a process, it'll be on a medium mandatory, it'll be on a medium integrity level. If an admin who has asked for the permissions with the run as administrator shoots up something, that's running high. And Mr. or Mrs. System is the only one who can use the system one. There's actually two more which you can't see anywhere. It was unrestricted on top of even system, but you can't use it for anything, so we'll stick with this. I'll stick to this. What's running low is IE, email software, other browsers. So it's basically a way of dividing software into classes by how dangerous they are. If you have a software that's running with an integrity level of low, that means it's a really high risk, security-wise, really high risk process. So they try to run it as low so it wouldn't be able to do anything. And if you're talking about resources, the higher the integrity level, the more critical the resource. Like system files are running as system and temporary files are running as low. I don't know if any one of you has ever wondered why user profiles are looking like they do in Windows. If you go to perhaps a user's profile here, you know there's the single app data folder. So now you know why it's divided in three. You probably knew why it was divided in two. There's stuff that roams with the roaming profile, and there's stuff that doesn't roam with the roaming profile. But the difference between low and local low, the difference between local and local low is the integrity level. So local has an integrity level of medium, local low has an integrity level of low. So IE can store temporary files in the low one, but not in the local one. Why should we matter? Basically, because of not being able to delete something. I would be amazed if no one has come up with run into a situation like this. You're trying to destroy something by everything that you know you should be able to delete it. There's no share. You have full control in your NTFS security permissions, and you're still not able to delete it. If you go to program files, just try deleting something in Windows 8 or 7. Almost everything will give you access denied. I'll say 90% of the time it's just because you're not the owner, but she is, meaning the trusted installer service who owns it. Then you have to use take-own-exe just to get it to yourself first and then delete it. But if you still cannot delete it, then it's because of the integrity levels. You can set it with the iCackles command. That's why if you do proper, I say proper, because not many even know this, but if you ask me how to do software testing for going to Windows 7 or 8, I always say that you need 4 user accounts to test it. So, because you have to test with 32 and 64-bit, that makes maximum of 8 tests per software. So if you've got a lot of software, it's a hassle, I know, but meaning that if you try the software out and it doesn't work with the normal user, then you have to change to a administrator account, but not the built-in one. If it doesn't work with that one, then you will change to the built-in admin. Why? Because there's no UAC with the built-in one. If it doesn't work for him, then you will change to her, meaning the system account, because it has a higher integrity level. By this test, you have already found out so many reasons for it not to work. So, why do we need system and how do we get system? I did this just because there are so many sessions on MDT. There's a really, really cool exe on MDT, which is never used for this, but can be used for this, called serviceui.exe. It's probably the only thing that can bypass the service isolation technology introduced in Vista. You could use this, but this one is a lot easier and you probably know it better anyway, so we'll use PSXSec. Let's see the difference quickly. Here we have a user who will run command prompt, run as administrator, and he will go into system volume information but gets access denied. He will use regedit and go to check out the SAM, Security Account Manager Database, or the Security Hive. But those are totally empty. If you compare that to PSXX SID CMD exe, here, who am I? System. Bam, regedit, bam, bam. So basically, if you're doing troubleshooting, why should you troubleshoot with an account that doesn't even see everything? That's like the reason for using the system account. If you go to scheduled tasks, that's way cool in Windows 8. If you go to scheduled tasks, at least everything the computer does. There's lots of stuff, you know, like defrag for older disks and stuff like that. If you go there, check it out with an administrator, even the built-in one, you can't see, like you can see 90% of stuff. But if you use system and go there, you can see stuff like why group policy is updating and how the new group policy updating scheduled tasks work and stuff like that. So the system can just see so much more than an admin ever will. And it can kill processes. Be careful. There's a few safety measures preventing you from killing the whole operating system, but not that many. You can kill your operating system easily with the system account. So to be careful on what you kill, because with the admin account, there will be an access denied and you're safe. Process diagnostics. If using system account was the second most important thing that you do to do proper troubleshooting, the most important one is about processes. Probably so many of you went to the previous session, so I don't know about Mark's session this year, what it has, but I would be amazed if it didn't have something like this in it. Why are we talking about black belt? Why do we have belt values for troubleshooting? That sounds silly. But if you want to talk about belt values, then I would say that the yellow belt guys are the guys who think that if they're running, for example, Explorer, and then they know that they can go to Task Manager, and they see Windows Explorer, and they think that this one is hanging. We know that Explorer X is never hanging, but just let's play with it a little bit. Those are the guys who think that that's an actual piece of code running, although it's rather a window, perhaps. Then we have the like blue belt guys, the guys who know better. And if someone is having trouble with their computer, they are willing to tell them that no, it actually it's not your Explorer. It's not your window that is hanging, but there's a process behind it. So they shoot up Task Manager, go here, and show them that here you actually have explorer.exe. That's the process which is hanging. A lot of you would probably be willing to throw me out of here if I said that I think that in Windows Vista, Explorer XE was never hanging. But I actually think so. Because that's what differentiates the troubleshooters from each other. If you really think that Explorer XE is hanging, you won't get anywhere. Because the weird thing is that Task Manager can only show processes, although processes can't do anything. How would a process hang if it can't do anything? It's basically nowadays a sandbox for sub-processes called threads. And only threads execute something, so threads can be hanging, but the process itself is just a box. You can see it in Task Manager, so you know Mark's tool, Process Explorer, which is probably the easiest one to show this with. You know why I deserve that? No, I actually thought it was the wrong one. Where's my Hyper-V? I forgot something. Yes. Come on. Exit. Let's go here. Explorer XE, properties, and threads. Now you see a warning because I don't have the debugging tools. That's what I meant, that they work as supporting the sysinternals tools, not so much of debugging itself. Here we go. shcore.dll is banging on my processor all the time. Let's try this out. Let's use the browser of our choice. Oh my God, I'm gonna mess this up. I hope I can write it. Bing. I actually heard a Microsoft employee talking to another one outside the hall. They were going to give a presentation, and that's like the funniest thing I've heard during this week, when he was telling the other guy that now at the conference when we have this session, you have to remember to Google with Bing. I'm like, come on, if Google owns the verb, that's something to aim for. Let's say Explorer XE is hanging. And I will bet you that your answer to your question probably is here. So the problem is the noise. Now that you do troubleshooting, basically what you do is you have to narrow down the amount of answers that you get. The way you do it is get rid of people who are using their yellow or blue belts and just focus on people who know what they're talking about a bit more. So if you compare this 55,800 results and let's see, S27 results. So that's like a lot better at least. So get rid of the noise. Make good searches. That's the bad thing for me, you know, when I have a Finnish UI to try and find help. That's like impossible. I hate using localized versions of Windows anyway, but that's like really hard. The one good thing is that, you know, who's seen Lord of the Rings?
Everyone raised their hands up.
I should usually first ask everyone raise their hands up who are not going to raise their hands up and get you moving. But so most of you probably know J.R.R. Tolkien is the guy who wrote the books. So the language of the elves, that's based on Finnish, because he wanted to find a language that no one would understand, so just to start off with. But hey, it's good for us. We don't need any BitLocker or IPsec. Everything is encrypted in unreadable form, so easier for us anyway. Because so many of you are going to the party tonight. You know what you are not allowed to do today, or what you should not do? You know the small troll in Lord of the Rings? Gollum. You know him? You don't want to get yourself today, what you don't want to get yourself is a Gollum hangover. You know what that is? That's when you wake up naked and gray behind a rock and you've lost the ring. So, safe mode. Windows has a built-in nice feature called safe mode. The only thing is that if you get something running in safe mode, you have no idea why. This happens to me all the time. I call someone and tell them, like, does it work in safe mode? And they say yes. But, like, basically that's it. Windows doesn't offer you any hints on, like, why it's working in safe mode, why it's not working in the normal mode. First of all, Windows 8. You will not get into safe mode by pressing F8, so we have to get the basics here. You can press Shift Restart, or you can open up it from the control panel. Advanced Startup, that'll take you into safe mode. There's two reasons for it. First of all, slates don't have F8 to press on. And secondly, the USB keyboard driver is probably the slowest one in the whole boot up process. So they wanted to take that out totally. So it doesn't have a driver to accept the F8. That's why you have to go there some other way. Safe mode is tweakable. If you ask Microsoft, I'm not so sure that they would say that this is recommended stuff, but I teach this on every single troubleshooting course because you need it for two reasons. One, safe mode needs there's stuff that you can't do in the safe mode that you have to do, and also you will need this to know why it works in safe mode. So safe mode is handled in the registry and configured in the registry in a hive called the HK Local Machine System Current Control Set Control Soft Control Safe Boot, not a hive but a key. I'll show it to you in a demo. Let's take the virtual machine here. Nope, not that one, this one. So to get into safe mode, I'll probably do this from the command prompt, from the control panel. Just to be sure. General, advanced startup, restart now. Sorry? What? Actually, what happens here is that Windows 8 handles this totally differently, in a totally different way. There's actually a small Windows RE working behind. And if your operating system isn't booting up, it'll automatically boot you into the small RE, which has this same interface here. And then you will just have to go again to troubleshoot and to advanced options and to startup settings. Quite easy compared to pressing F8, huh? We're not even done here, hey. Restart again. As you saw, I'm running Hyper-V. I should get points for that. I had to do all my VMs again for this conference. Let's take an example of how to use safe mode and why to use safe mode. If you go to Microsoft's documentation, there's many places where you can see instructions on what to do if you install a software and your computer stops working. At that point, you could go to safe mode and uninstall the software. Sounds reasonable. Whenever this is willing to boot up. I've installed Adobe Reader. I don't think Adobe Reader is going to break. It usually doesn't even need any updating to it, as you know. So. But I've got Adobe Reader here, so let's just go here, app with CPL. So let's go to add remove programs, take Adobe Reader, and just uninstall it, and press yes and no. Of course, every instruction tells you that please do MSI packaging for your software, but you're not able to uninstall it from the safe mode. Sounds reasonable? Not to me. You know that I think it's just fine that every single home user who is trying to do this has to first go to services, MSC, find out the Windows installer service here, and go and start it before he can take something out. And it's even better that you can't start it in safe mode because Microsoft has prevented it. So now we go for the registry. Where it goes? Here, system current control set control safe boot. Here we have two safe modes, the normal one and the one with the networking stack. So we are now in the normal one, minimal. First of all, what do you have? You have a list of drivers and services that are running in safe mode. Like under current control set services, you have the list for a normal mode. So if you want to know what's different between normal mode and safe mode, at least you know where to get the list to figure out why it's working or not. And more importantly for this scenario, we need it just to allow the Windows installer to start. We'll create a new key, type in the service name that we wish, MSI server, and change the default value to service, not a driver. Go to services, and here we go. Running. And there we go. There are those antivirus programs which come in a yellow box. I don't want to tell you the name. I've had a little trouble of getting those out of a computer sometimes. This basically is the best way to do it. Run in safe mode and just get it out. You can do the same thing for drivers, and you can do the same thing for services. If you want to have a semi-safe mode, that's even better. That's done with msconfig or autoruns. In msconfig, the best thing is that you can choose the services tab and hide all Microsoft services. I actually think that if you only have a Windows machine, it kind of works quite well by its own. Usually something starts breaking when you get something on it. If you would have an operating system which just wasn't stable without any software on it, it would be bigger of a deal. I usually start with this. You can just cross out a few, press OK, reboot it. It'll reboot without those. And the best thing is that you have the inventory. You don't have to have a piece of paper and write down, I've tried this, I've tried this, I've tried this, because you will see the UI exactly like this when you reopen it. You know which one you have checked and which you haven't. Same goes for autoruns. Windows 8 BSOD, blue screen of death. There's a few changes to that one too. When your computer is crashing, I always tell my students that you have to remember that if you really have a crash, that's not a blue screen. Because blue screen is something that the operating system itself does. It's the last thing to do. What happens during a blue screen, and mainly during a memory dump? First of all, you have settings which tell you what kind of dumps do we take. Sounds so weird. Talking about kernel dumps. Hey, it's the last day. So, if you compare this to Windows 7, there's two differences. First of all, the most important one is that in Windows 7, if you had 2 gigs of memory or more, you would lose the complete memory dump. Now it's back there. Basically, normally we use kernel memory dump because something that happens in the kernel initiates a blue screen. So we want to have the kernel memory. What happens is that it just flushes it straight to a file that it knows is open. It won't take risks of opening new handles to files and creating something, but it flushes everything to pagefile.sys and then renames pagefile.sys to memory.dmp. So the page file has to be big enough. If we use a complete memory dump, then everything in the kernel mode and in the user mode gets written to the page file and to the memory dump. You would need to do this, for example, if you had a hanging office solution and you would need to send the memory dump to product support services. They would also need to see what's happening in the office, not in the kernel. So you need both. In Windows 7, you had to go to the registry to change it to complete if you had more than 2 gigs of memory. Windows 8, that comes back, and you also have a new one called the automatic memory dump. which basically is the best one. What happens is that it keeps your page file in a level that you can always do a kernel memory dump, but when something bad happens, it'll automatically expand the page file so that if you still have another crash, it can take a complete memory dump. After a week of stable running operating system, then it'll just resize it back to a lower value. Most important thing is to be always to be able to crash your computer. This is not something to bug your friend with. This is actually something that you really do need. It was a problem in Windows 7 with USB keyboards. We had about a year of time when we weren't able to do it, because USB is so up high on the stack compared to PS2 that just didn't work. But now it works. So you have a register value that you set so that you can just generate a memory dump. Why you need to do that is when someone calls you and asks for a memory dump to be able to debug it. You have to be able to crash it when in need. You got the hanging Word document there, you need the blue screen. You just inject that, and then basically you can just press I was so sure I was going to do that live. I honestly had it first in the registry. I was so sure I'm going to do it, so I had to take it out. What do you do with the BSOD? First of all, you install debugging tools to the computer. Take the newest one, even if it's beta. Then you need a value to your system variable. So take your computer properties. As you can see, I don't really mind the new Windows 8 user interface at all, because I've typed everything since NT, so it just works fine. Let's go here, advanced environment variables. And then you need to do a system variable. What does it do? It actually tells the debugger that when it needs the simple files, which are needed for debugging, you can just fetch it from Microsoft's public simple server and download it to C drive simples folder. Actually, Microsoft has their own, because it's protected code. They have the private simple server, but that's for internal use only. So public is what we can get, and that's enough, because all the other people using Bing are using the same. If you want to do the best you can do, you don't have to do more than this usually, or I'd say it's a waste of your time. You just shoot up WinDBG and ask it for the reason. Open crash dump or use Dart's memory dump analyzer. It'll just give you a probable cause of hanging. There's a evaluation which I would really much like you to fill in. There's not that many of you, and I'm really begging that you please do it, because this is my first time in TechEd, and they will never let me come back if they don't get the evaluations. So I would really much appreciate it. I also have the official raffle hat here, if you have your business cards for the RT, and I also have some t-shirts for some questions, but I'll probably take the questions down here and let you go. So thank you, everyone.